It's Tuesday, and that means it's time for Riley Gates, our K-State insider and former high school football and basketball star.
Venary fumbles the snap, picks it back up. Pressure comes from Luke Guiler. He backs into the end zone, and Blue Jays are going to get two more points. Riley Gates back there as well as Caleb Brummer.
Okay, so he isn't Darren Sproles or Dean Wade. Cool last name, by the way. But Riley's knowledge knows no bounds.
I love Whataburger. I really like the patty melt. The patty melt is really good. It's like a double burger, so you get the traditional burger. You're not going with chicken or anything like that. But just kind of the sauce that's on the patty melt. I really like it.
And he's already working on his political career.
We never lied. I don't know what you're talking about. We were never liars.
It's Go Powercats' very own Riley Gates. Brought to you by Hanson Auction and Realty in Beloit. And by Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. Right now on the Sports Ticket.
It is a Tuesday. It means time to talk to Go Powercats Riley Gates, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, talk K-State football. And Riley, K-State, did they salvage the season with that win Saturday against Oklahoma State? What do you think?
Well, I have to think that it's about as close as you can get to really salvaging a season. I mean, you know, that. I guess I'm going to steal a direct quote from Dalton Risner when he said, you know, Oklahoma State needed that win. We had to have it. It was a got-to-have win. And that's exactly what it was.
Well, it was gut check time, and I tell you, that offensive line did a wonderful job. Let's start with the positives of this one. And, you know, the offensive line now the last 2 weeks has really done a nice job. And I know you've been critical of it, as has many people, and it's probably deserved criticism. They were not getting it done based on the standards and expectations based on the experience coming back, but now it seems like they have awoken.
You know, I really got to give some credit to that offensive line because I was impressed by what they did at Baylor, but I also took it with a grain of salt because Baylor was one of the worst run defenses, one of the worst defenses in the Big 12. And so I was kind of skeptical, you know, was it just a bad defense they played? But Oklahoma State was the number one rushing defense in the country, or excuse me, not in the country, in the Big 12. And Alex Barnes goes for four touchdowns. You know, we see a dominant ground attack again from K-State, which is exactly what we thought we were going to see all season long. You know, it's frustrating that it took until game seven to get it going. But, you know, better late than never, so to speak. And I think it was a really good performance by that offensive line and maybe something they can build on moving forward. Definitely two back-to-back very positive weeks. And, you know, I can't think that does anything but build your confidence with the last five games or so of the season here.
Well, when you have a running back that runs for over 200 yards last week, and then this week he runs for 181 and a career high, tying four touchdowns. You have to ask the question, because the offensive line paved the way for 291 yards rushing on the day. Barnes with 181, is how much of it is the offensive line, and how much is it the running back? And Barnes, there were some huge holes for him again this week, but at the same time, he's stronger than he was a year ago. He worked on his physique big time during the offseason. He's stronger. He's breaking more tackles and getting yards after contact. Talk about his development and the fact that he is the go-to guy now.
Yeah. You know, I think Alex is one of the guys that really kind of looked at this team and said, man, we got to do something. You know, I got to do something. And I think he's really kind of taken the blame, so to speak. You know, he's really shouldered a lot of the troubles of this team. And he's always wanted to be a workhorse. He's always wanted to get the majority of the carries, sit there and get, you know, 20, 25 carries a game. But they just really haven't ever given him those kind of carry numbers in his early career. But now as a junior, we're seeing him pick up more carries. And, you know, I don't have the exact stat in front of me, but I believe it's Alex Barnes rushes for, you know, at least 100 or 150, something like that, every time he carries the ball 20 or more times in a game. And, you know, you really can't argue with those numbers. I think that when you get that ground game going early, it opens up so many other things for this offense. And, you know, I know the passing attack didn't exactly have a great game. Skylar Thompson definitely was not good at all in the first half of the game, but he was pretty good in the second half, and I was really impressed. So, you know, I think a lot of the offensive success obviously gets credit to the offensive line first. I think they paved the way. They blocked for Skylar Thompson to have time to throw the ball. But I think it really goes for the running game. I think Alex Barnes is a big part of that.
Riley Gates of GoPowercat.com, our guest every Tuesday, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company. You know, you mentioned Skylar Thompson. To me, it felt to me like they scaled things back with the passing game. They felt like they had a good matchup running the football against Oklahoma State. And to me, it felt like Skylar Thompson was a game manager. Just don't lose the game for us. He threw a couple picks at Baylor, even though K-State put up 34 points in that game. But it felt to me like it was, Skylar, don't lose the game for us. Be a game manager, which we saw many times for Alex Smith in Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, I think that that's maybe a little bit accurate. I think one thing that needs to be noted that not a lot of people heard because of the way that post-game press conferences are set up at K-State is, and I got to give credit to D. Scott Fritchin here for this one because he's the one that heard this from Skylar. He said that, you know, he was playing a little bit nervous, a little bit uptight. And, you know, that makes sense with everything that's gone down the last few weeks, just with him constantly battling for this quarterback position. He hasn't really had time to settle into the job as his own and not really have to worry about looking over his back. You know, is Alex Dalton right there? Am I going to get pulled? And I think that maybe that was the type of game that he needed to shake off, you know, being the fully trusted starter here. And, you know, I think that that was a good outing to get it done in because obviously K-State didn't need him late in the game. You know, you don't want to see that type of performance at all, you know, whether or not it's his first start, his second start, whatever, or his 90th start. But, you know, I think that what we're seeing from Skylar Thompson is just the typical sophomore struggles that you're going to get out of a guy his age. And it's unfair to expect him to be perfect every game, especially when there's been this back and forth at the quarterback position. And I think that moving forward as he gets more time as the number one starter, I think we're going to see him settle into it a lot easier and do a much better job here over the last five games.
Well, and he made good decisions in regards to being very decisive when he was going to run the ball, get to the first down marker. He ran the ball very well, and that was part of the 291-yard rushing day for the K-State offense. All right, what do you know? What are you hearing through the grapevine? What can you tell us about Alex Dalton as he was not dressed to play for the second straight week?
Well, you know, I haven't heard a whole lot of definitives, you know, one way or the other. I've heard some talk that, you know, he could be back and ready to go for this Oklahoma game coming up, but I think it's the widely believed thought, even with Coach Snyder, frankly, at this time, that, you know, this is Skylar's job. You don't bench Skylar unless he's just playing atrocious. You start Skylar every game. But that's also what we've thought a lot of times this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've thought that it was Skylar's job to lose, and he constantly kept playing Alex Dalton, so... You know, I think the best thing that Skylar did was play really well at Baylor. You know, I know he threw two very costly interceptions at Baylor, and he didn't play phenomenal in this game. But that second half was that, like you said, game manager type of mindset from Skylar Thompson, and it showed that he can handle this offense. And I think he became a very strong vocal leader, too, in the second half. I think that Bill Snyder's coming to the realization that this is his position, and Alex Dalton is his backup. If Alex Dalton's healthy and ready to go next, I guess, if you really want to go that way, against Oklahoma. So we'll see. We'll get a little bit more definitive, maybe answers next, probably not today at the press conference, probably at next week's press conference, but, you know, we'll see moving forward what the quarterback position holds.
Well, I know you and I have talked about this, and I hate to bring it up again, but this goes back to what we've said all along. If Skylar Thompson was just given the keys like he should have been, at the start of this year, and he was named the number one starter, and he would have had, we wouldn't have messed around with playing Dalton for the first half against Texas. Thompson would have started that game. How he would have played in the first half, we don't know, because he didn't. But to me, Kansas State, if they would have allowed Skylar Thompson go through some of those growing pains and just give him the keys, this team won, I think would have a better record right now. He'd be more comfortable in the position. He wouldn't have been as nervous as late in the season it has been recently because of looking over his shoulder, as you referred to. I think you win the Texas game had you given the keys to him at the start of the year, and or at least to start the Big 12 and make it clear he's the number one starter. And I could argue that they win the game against Baylor because he would have more experience and maybe not make the mistakes he made in Waco. Is that fair, or is that just me looking through it with rose-colored glasses had he started all year?
I think it's very fair to think that. You know, I think he would have gotten, you know, what quarterback were you going to play against Mississippi State and win that game? None of them. You were going to lose that game no matter who played. Make that a game that he can go through his growing pains. Make the UTSA game, and then obviously West Virginia, keep him in that situation, those games you're going to definitively win or definitively lose, and have him go through those growing pains, have him get that experience before the games that are toss-ups, before the Texas, before the Baylor, you know, things like that. I think it would have really benefited him to have that time. And you, like you mentioned, it, we hit on it so much in the first few weeks of the season. I think it's really unfortunate that he kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, he kind of got the short end of the stick here on the situation. I think he was always the better quarterback and definitely always should have been playing a longer amount of time. But, you know, I guess that's the situation that K-State's in. Better late than never, and we'll see how he does moving forward. This is just kind of a I mean, honestly, this season right now, the best thing you're going to do is win six, maybe seven games. And where you're going to go to a very mediocre bowl game. So this, I guess you got to chalk this season up to maybe just a learning season for Skylar Thompson, and we'll see what he does as a junior, assuming he returns to K-State.
Well, and they one thing that would, I think, blow the top of many K-State fans would be at some point later this year, if Thompson, unless he's hurt, of course, if he's healthy and he gets pulled out of a game, considering where the season has or is going, even if they make it to a mediocre bowl game, as you mentioned, then I don't know. That could be the last straw where Skylar says, I don't know if I want to come back. That would be a tough spot. I think K-State would be crazy to jerk around the quarterback any more than they have. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think they're already on thin ice with Skylar Thompson, and rightfully so. You know, I really do think that he didn't really get a fair look, a fair chance at this position at the start of the season. And, you know, when you come in and you work your butt off for three seasons now, you know, including his redshirt season, you graduate high school early, you know, you gave up your last semester of high school with your friends and everything like that in order to come in and try to learn the system, and then that's the way that you're treated early on. I don't really blame him if you would want to go somewhere else, but, you know, maybe these last few weeks have kind of changed his mind. Maybe they'll show him more trust over the next 5-6 weeks. And we'll see him want to stay, and we'll see him want to be the quarterback for the next two seasons. It'd really be beneficial for K-State because I don't think you have anything with Alex Delton, really. I think you have an average quarterback at best, and I don't think you want to put a redshirt freshman in John Holcomb under center next year either. So you really need Skylar Thompson under center next year if that's what you're – if you're wanting to be a better team next season. So find a way to make him happy. Find a way to – keep him on campus, I guess.
Well, and I think one of the other reasons why K-State's been successful running the football is Skylar's played all four quarters of the last two games. You have some consistency there. The offensive line knows how to block for him, how he runs, how he sits in the pocket. And then you have the threat of Skylar's arm that opens up the running game. And as we see, when Delton's in there, everybody's loading up to stop the run, and it makes you one-dimensional. All right, so this weekend, K-State does not play. They'll be at Oklahoma next Saturday. We'll talk more about that matchup coming up with Riley next Tuesday. I want to turn our attention to basketball season. The K-State men and women's season will be beginning very soon. College basketball is on the horizon. K-State men, they have a lot of expectations this year. Bruce Weber is not shying away from those. Seems to be a lot of confidence going into this season. I guess the question for you, Riley, is now that you are somewhat the hunted and there's a target, there's an X on your back, and yes, Kansas will be the favorite, but everybody else is saying K-State is the top challenger to the throne for the Jayhawks. Can they handle these expectations?
That's the big question, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think that this is a team that's very capable of doing so. You know, it's obviously one of the most talented teams at K-State in the last, 10 years? I mean, yeah. Since Michael Beasley was here in 08, this is probably the third most talented team, maybe the second most talented team that they've had. So, you know, I think this team has the capability to live up to those expectations, to really push Kansas for the Big 12. But I also, and let me play devil's advocate here, this team wouldn't be a top 10 preseason team. I think they'd be pushing for the top 25 maybe around 2022, mm-hmm. had UMBC not beaten Virginia,
yes.
and K-State gets bounced in the second round of the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
You know, let's look at their NCAA tournament run. In fairness, they played the teams in front of them. They beat Creighton soundly. They beat Kentucky in the Sweet 16, and that was very, very impressive. You don't fluke into beating Kentucky. But you also got very lucky playing UMBC in the second round. You got lucky playing a team like Loyola, and I shouldn't even say lucky because you lost in the Elite Eight.
Right.
But you know, it wasn't exactly the toughest road to the Elite Eight ever. It wasn't like that 2010 team had. So, you know, while I think it's a very talented team, I think they are the second best, maybe third best team in the Big 12. You know, I just I strongly encourage people to set the bar high. You have Dean Wade back. You have Barry Brown back. You have the entire team back from an Elite Eight run from a very good team last season. So there's no reason you shouldn't be very talented. But frankly, I just don't think right now they're a top 10 team, and that's where they're going to be to start the season. And, you know, like I said, that's a product of making the Elite Eight and returning what you return. Sometimes you get that ranking, and maybe you don't necessarily deserve it. It's just they have such a tough non-conference schedule on top of the fact that maybe they're a little bit overranked that I think fans might, if they lose to Marquette, let's say, if they go to Marquette and they lose, you're going to tumble down in the rankings and fans are going to freak out. And that's where I would just say, hey, I don't know if this is necessarily a top 10 team quite yet. So we'll see how the season goes. This non-conference schedule is going to be very crucial to watch because they do actually get tested. They might play Missouri. They will play Marquette. They're going to play a very good Vanderbilt team in Kansas City. So it's going to be a fun season, I think. I think K-State will meet some pretty strong expectations. But I'm not out here ready to claim them Big 12 champions quite yet.
Well, and I think you really make some good points. I'm glad you mentioned that because, you know, I kind of been thinking that a little bit too, that the expectations might be a little bit unrealistic based on, I remember when you and I think, talked before the Big 12 tournament last year. I mean, K-State was very fortunate to beat TCU in the Big 12 tournament. We were talking about possibly being a bubble team. And then all of a sudden, you get a break, and then you make a run to the Elite Eight, and all of a sudden this is a top 10 team. This was not a top 10 team last year. This is a team that was close to the bubble, if not on the bubble, until the very last week or 2 weeks of the season. And they have everybody back, which everybody points as a positive, which it is. But at the same time, I see what you're seeing is that they weren't a top 10 or even a top 20 team late last year. They did catch a break early on in the tournament. They took advantage of that. It should be pointed out Dean Wade didn't play very much in that whole run either. But I get what you're saying because it does seem like people think this is a team that's going to maybe challenge Kansas for the Big 12 title, and maybe they do. But we saw this team with everybody they have now last year struggle in and out offensively to score points.
Exactly. That's my thing, is that I'm never one to take away from what you did. K-State earned its way into the Elite Eight, and you play the teams that are in front of you. You don't have control over who you play. You just play who steps up in front of you. So all credit there. But I just don't see right now a top 10 type team. You know, like you mentioned that TCU game, if they lose that game, they might go to Dayton for the playing game, and maybe you lose in Dayton, maybe you don't make the tournament. I don't know what happens. You know, that's the beauty of the NCAA tournament. It's so random. But this is also one of the downsides of the NCAA tournament. I think Loyola is probably going to be like a top 12 team this year or something like that. I mean, do we really think Loyola is going to be a top 12 team?
No.
So I think a lot of people got really excited about the Elite Eight, got excited about returning this many people, and they have the bar very high, and rightfully so. I think it's good that fans are expecting this. You know, they're not satisfied with finishing fifth in the Big 12. They're not satisfied with a first weekend exit. But I just want to see this team do it on a consistent basis. I want to see this team do it more than just a hot 2 weeks in the NCAA tournament before I'm ready to go out here and start declaring them Big 12 contenders and a top four seed in the tournament. I mean, he's had a top four tournament seed here at K-State, and what happened? They lost to LaSalle. So let's just kind of wait. Let's see how they handle the non-conference schedule. Let's see how they handle a pretty tough start to the Big 12 season, and see how the season goes. Maybe it's really, really good and they meet those expectations, or maybe they stumble and it's just a disaster. You know, that 2010-11 team, they came off in the Elite Eight with Jacob Pullen and Curtis Kelly, Jamar Samuels, and they started 2-6 in the Big 12. So you never really know. It's a wild sport, and who really knows what can happen.
And remember, last year they were 10-8 in the Big 12, 25-12 overall. And I've said this before many times already, that, you know, K-State could be a team that goes 30-7 or something like that. You know, they could go, I don't know, 13-5 in the Big 12. Let's say all that. And I would bet almost everything I got that they will not make it to the Elite Eight, even though they'll have a better seed and a better team, because it's all about matchups. And I'd say the same thing about KU. They made a Final Four last year, and I think most people would say talent-wise, KU is much more talented than last year's team. I will play the odds they don't make it back to the Final Four. It's tough, man.
I would agree. You know?
It's tough.
I don't think there's any way you can pencil K-State. I mean, obviously, you got to see the bracket, but until you just see them do it again, there's no reason to put them in an Elite Eight. I mean, that's just an unrealistically high bar.
I'm with you. All right, you know about, speaking of KU, they have the college basketball corruption trial they're having in New York and all this, and there's all talk with Adidas and KU, and of course there's shoe companies that deal with many other big programs, Nike, Under Armour being mentioned now with Kentucky and Duke and North Carolina and all that. So my off-the-wall question for you today, Riley, is you're a younger guy, so you're probably big into shoes. What's the most money you have ever paid for a pair of shoes? Or maybe if you don't want to share that, what's the most you know of somebody that's paid for a pair of shoes?
Well, you know, I'm not as big into shoes as my brother Parker. I mean, it is insane the amount of shoes he owns. I couldn't even tell you how much money he's spent on them. So I think he has spent, like, almost, if not at least, $200 on a pair of shoes.
Wow.
I wouldn't be shocked if that's what he spent, but honestly, I don't know. He's bought so many shoes over the years. I know he bought a lot when he was a senior in high school. The most I've ever spent on a pair was, like, it was either $140 or $160, and it wasn't even, like, the shoe. I was in high school, and, like, obviously, you know, you buy new basketball shoes every year, really excited to get the new shoe. And my favorite NBA player of all time is Carmelo Anthony.
Oh,
I love Carmelo Anthony, and he had his M8, M9, M10 line. And I think it was like the M8 or the M9 when I was a freshman or a sophomore in high school. And I didn't care what the price tag was. I was buying those shoes. They weren't even that good of shoes. They were really heavy.
Yes. That's the thing. When you pay too much for something you hope that they last and they actually live up to the hype or expectations, as we were just talking about with the K-State men's basketball team. So let me ask you this. So is Parker getting a whole bunch of brand new shoes now that he's going to be a basketball coach?
Dude, I mean, you got to imagine that T&P just has like a closet of Nike shoes just stocked in there, right?
Oh, is Nike sponsoring? Nike sponsors T&P? Is that what you're telling me?
I have no idea, but I have to imagine those. You know how those Catholic schools work.
Well, and then my last question I got to ask you, where do you and Parker come up with that much money to buy shoes, man? You must be making bank doing jobs that I never had the opportunity when I was in college. I was sitting there going, ramen noodles, Natty Light, that's what I could afford.
Well, I got to tell you, I mean, when you're an eighth grader, ninth grader, seventh grader, whatever, and you're mowing the St. John's Cemetery with you and your brother, and you're mowing at least twice a month, and you get paid per time you mow it, you make a lot of money.
Well, that's good to know. If there's an opening to mow the cemetery, I better apply, or somebody better, and get an opportunity.
I would just encourage you, if you're going to take that job, you set that price tag high, because that was not a fun job for 6 years.
How long would that take you to mow the cemetery? And then you have to, what, weed eat around the tombstones and all that, didn't you?
Every single headstone, yeah. I mean, if you buckled down and went hard to work, I mean, it was, you could do it in a little over a day. I mean, like, you know, we'd go up there 7 or 8,
uh-huh.
Probably leave at 3 or 4, but then Dad would come up, help a little bit. So kind of tough to really judge, but it definitely was not just a couple hour job.
Wow. So you guys weren't big fans of it raining a lot, because that meant you'd have to go up there and do it a lot more often.
I was a lot more excited about the first 3 years and the pay on that rather than I was when Dad re-upped for the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, because if it rains more, you got to mow more, which means more work, but you make more money. So I guess it depends how you look at it.
Exactly. And why do you think I went and got a job at the golf course?
Because yeah.
I wanted out of that cemetery.
So you could listen to us and play Stump the Waterside Wake Up Guys. I see how it all went.
That's what I was paid to do.
There you go, man. Hey, you do what they pay you to do. I get it. Well, you do a great job at Go Power Cat, and I'm hoping you make more money than you did when you were in school there at Go Power Cat. Yeah, I guess you know that's something to talk with Fitz about. But tell us what you're working on right now.
Yeah, it's bye weeks are weird, man. There's no football game to prepare for, but you know we've got tons of basketball stuff left over from media day, so we'll do some of that. We're gonna get ready to head up to Big 12 basketball media day next week, so. Have some of that coming down soon. I have a podcast up either tonight or tomorrow. So even on the bye week, there's still stuff to talk about, which I guess is good, because it's better to be talking about stuff in the middle of October than it is to be searching for things to talk about in June and July.
Absolutely. Well, we always enjoy talking with you. We look forward to previewing Oklahoma K-State next Tuesday with you, and have a great weekend, man.
All right, Wade, sounds good.
Take care. That's Riley Gates, GoParacat.com, and he's on every Tuesday with us on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Hanson Auction Realty in Beloit and Heineken Electric Residential and Commercial Electric Service Company in Beloit as well.